keep our minds on the game. All the
games. You are listening to 90.7 KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only live board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and accepting randomness into your life. I'm your host, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing, James?
I am doing pretty good today. How are you doing, Nate?
I'm doing okay. I'm not hearing you out of my headphones right now, but I think it's because the jack's jacked. You can send us questions and comments in real time using the OLARC messaging system on kboo.fm. And James, are you hearing me in your headphones?
I can hear you in my headphones.
Okay,
let's hope
good.
Everyone else can hear me.
Yeah.
Please let us know on Ozark if you can't.
OLARC.
Ozark.
Ozark's OLARC. A television show or a place.
Good.
Whichever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here we are. Winner's Bias. And before we get into anything, I just want to remind all of you lovely listeners that it is election day. Please go vote. Submit your ballots if you're in Portland. Your ballot has to be in the mail by today. So make sure you do that. Very important. And we today have a sort of variety of stuff to talk about. It's just me and James. We don't have a guest like we often do. So you just got to listen to us talk for a while. James, I thought you had something prepared for us today, right?
No, I did not. I failed on that. And that I want to bring you were going to make fun of me for that.
I'm still going to make fun of you. So James was going to prepare something with his daughter. A little quiz for me, because I'm always quizzing him. But James actually doesn't want to talk to his daughter, but just doesn't like doing it. And that's why it didn't happen.
Well, I could have done it, but now I want to. It puts up a good point of this show. I want to bring back the curtain a little bit, open it up to the listeners. That I'm just here to be the funny guy. Nate is the one here that does all the hard work. Builds up the list and does all the questions and works everything out, and I just come in, nothing planned, even when I meant to, and just sit here and make fun of Nate. So everyone, you know, this is just because of Nate.
I mean, this is why it works, you know?
So I'm using my failure to bring you up, Nate.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, so I did it on purpose.
Thank you, James. Your sacrifice is very meaningful to me. All right, so the first thing that I want to talk about today is... I had a situation. I have a son myself. I have two sons. My older son is 12, and he's been on KBOO. He was part of the youth collective for a few months. Oliver, come back. Just do the youth collective. What are you doing? You are awesome. Anyway,
listening to this.
He's not listening to this at all. I can't even. The part of the reason this is happening is because I can't get him to play board games, and I want him to play board games. Go ahead.
If he is listening, go back to school.
That's true.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Or at least pay attention in class. What's happening here? Actually, no. Listen in class. Make all your friends listen. Make your teachers listen. That's good, too. I can't get him to play board games. But you know who can get him to play board games? His peers. And his friends, specifically one of his friends, wanted him to play the game Root. And Root is a pretty complicated game where everyone takes a different woodland creature or animal. They don't necessarily, there's cats, and I don't know if cats are defined as woodland.
They are if they're in the woods.
That's true. There we go. You heard it from James mouth. So there's cats, there's rodents, there's birds, there's
badgers.
A raccoon, maybe in one of the expansions. I don't know, there's so many expansions.
I see a lot of adverts for them online. It keeps coming up with Root.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying adverts for badgers.
Yeah, I mean, like, there might be
those. You just
want to
buy
well.
A badger?
Yeah.
Yeah, come here. We'll get you a badger. It's very... it's a more complicated game because each of the factions has their own rule set in the game. And so his friend invited him to go play at a board game shop. Shout out to Board Bard Games in my neighborhood, Montevilla. And it really helped me realize something about the value of board game shops that I hadn't tangibly experienced. Like, I knew about it, but I hadn't tangibly experienced, which is their utility as a community space, as a third space for people. Literally, my kid and a couple of his friends went to Board Bard and they bought a couple snacks and drinks, but they played for over 3 hours with no expectation of them doing anything else but playing a board game. And I was like, oh my gosh, this space, this board game shop was just a place for, it's like an arcade, but with board games. And they could just go and be there for hours. And I'm the type of person who really doesn't like paying full price for games. And so I use the secondary market, and that's a whole other like discussion.
I think we have discussed that quite often.
Well, but not like the intricacies. James, there are intricacies of the secondary market. So I rarely spend full price, but like if my kid or kids are going to these board game shops and being able to spend hours of their day there, well, there's total value to that. And it makes me want to support the local board game stores even more, because what a great thing, as third spaces become harder and harder for young people to interact with. There were other people who I think were playing D&D there, all other young people. And it's like, oh my gosh, it just really drove home how valuable a resource board game stores are. So support your local board game stores.
But you didn't care about board game stores until it affected you personally, and now you love them.
That's why I'm the worst.
That's a joke. He's always loved board game stores.
It's true. So anyway, I just wanted to have a little appreciation for what they do for our community. So going on to our next topic, we had James Games. Was it last week?
Oh, I say it's
2 weeks ago?
2 weeks? 3 weeks ago? Something like that.
Who knows how time works anymore? Yeah. And so that's where James comes over and plays a game, because, you know, James hasn't played as many games, and we're trying to force him to do that. And, we played a game called Lords of Vegas. James, how was it? Oh, and we played with, news director Althea. You know, KB's news director Althea was also there. Go for it, James. How was it?
I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun playing that one. I think this has been Lords of Vegas is up the top there of some of the games you've made me play.
Even though you were struggling to remember how it was even
played.
It
was like 3 weeks ago. Who knows how long ago it was? Yes.
It was two months ago.
Was it 2 months?
It was 2022.
I just remember enjoying it a lot. Once again, I came into your house. You had it all set up and everything was scary. You're always like, oh no, you set up the board game and you have all the pieces out and it's nice and easy. You can see everything. It's not scary. But when you do that, it's great that you do that, it frightens me.
There's hardly anything to set up on the board at that one. That's just like a deck of cards and a blank table.
It's still too much. See everything laid out and it's like, you had like five things stacked up, or like 10 things stacked up. And you have to go for each one. I don't know what each of them were.
They were different casinos.
Well, now I know that.
So in Lords of Vegas, what you're doing, it's the early days of Vegas. And you have a set amount of money to start the game. And you have some lots that you own in Vegas. And you're trying to build your casino on them. And there's cards that you flip. And they have casinos on them. And they'll pay out as the game goes on. You can gamble at other people's casinos. You can make deals with them to trade lots, to trade properties, all this stuff. It's a really interactive game. You can take over people's casinos, and that was happening a lot, and it's real fun because you just take a whole bunch of dice that represent the who's in control of the casino, and you re-roll them, and the person who has the highest die value takes over the casino, and it's fun, and it really evokes Vegas in a really interweaved way.
And it does. It includes my favorite kind of mechanic in a game, which is the luck-based. I love the luck-based with the flipping of the cards. You don't know what you're going to get and rolling the dice. I find that more fun, as I said before. It makes everyone on more fair ground. And it just can give you more moments of excitement, I feel like.
So are you suggesting that Althea's win, because Althea did win, was entirely because she was lucky?
100%.
Yeah, that's what I thought. We're trying to see if we can get Althea to run in here and yell at us.
No other reason why they could have possibly won.
Yeah, it's one of my top games of all time. And sorry, just getting some new headphones. It's one of my top games of all time.
I can see why.
It's
now one of my top games of all time. Is that even plugged in?
I don't know. I'm just gonna be in here. It's fine. It just had a Kickstarter come, so I think its availability is going to become easier for people. I think it's been out of print for a while. Again, getting to that secondary market thing. But the game just rules, and high laughter. High laughter. What are we doing? We're doing good on time.
I think the whole we mentioned this before, but the whole out of print thing with games is so confusing and weird when you first get into board games. Like, you don't understand how a game can be out of print. Why is it not being made constantly? They just decide, no more for this game.
Yeah, it's mostly because they don't always know how many copies they're going to sell. And because board games have a lot of components and parts that need to be printed or cut, like, you know, wooden bits to cut or manufactured, whatever. It just takes several months to get that production back up and running. You have to get back in line at production companies to get in. So, like, all these board game production companies have, like, their schedule of what games are coming up. And so if you sell out of a game, you're like, oh, okay, well, now we're several months down the line. And so, you know, they usually, the popular games are going to come back in print. There's a few that I think we mentioned El Grande a few weeks ago, where that game was released in 1995 and is still incredibly popular, but it was years in between print runs. And so it would cost like $100 to get a copy of El Grande. But I just got it for $30, $35 because it came back in print. And so, yeah, the secondary market's real weird. And it's just because nobody knows if a game's going to be popular. That's why Wingspan had so much issue staying in stock when it was first came out, because it was a total surprise.
Oh, wow.
They're like, oh, we're going to make 50,000 copies. And then the demand is for millions of copies.
I know when the first time I went to PAX, me and my friends played a game, and I can't remember what it was, and you could probably tell me what it was. You were a bunch of, like, prime ministers and people in the top countries, and there's, like, a nuke bomb coming, and you have to work together to make... You have to work together to make a rocket to get off the planet.
I don't know.
It was a lot of fun. And my friend Ken, who was on the PAX interview, he was like, I'm going to buy this game because we all enjoyed it, and then couldn't find it anywhere. And that's when we all found out games can go out of print. And we were like, what?
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things when you're first getting in the hobby is like, oh, I played this amazing game with my new board game friends. And then you go to buy it and it's like, where is it? That happened to me. My friend introduced me to this game called Manila, and I went to the store to buy it and it was gone. And then I got Camel Up instead because it was kind of similar in some ways. I honestly don't remember the ways that it's similar because it's been so long since I've played Manila. But
maybe a game for James Games.
Maybe. I'd have to borrow it from my friend if he still has it. It's been a while. I think it is available again, though. I'm going to do a quick reset here. So you're listening to KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate, here with James, and this is Winner's Bias. We're talking about a variety of board game topics. It's a chat stew.
What? I didn't even see that on there.
Yeah, you know, I snuck that one by you. So the another thing that I want to talk about is I just played a game of Great Western Trail New Zealand. I played it twice a few weeks ago. And Great Western Trail is the original game's called Great Western Trail. It's about driving cattle across America and delivering them to different cities. And there's, you know, scoring points. There's a whole bunch of ways to score points. And it's a really good game. And then they released Great Western Trail Argentina and Great Western Trail New Zealand. And I don't own any of them. And I've been waiting to see, like, which one do I like best so I know which one I want to buy. And the first time I played Great Western Trail Argentina, the only time I played that one, I didn't like it. There were things that I was just like, those are bad changes. Then I played Great Western Trail New Zealand, and I thought, this is it. This is amazing. Instead of cows, it's sheep. I love sheep. I like sheep more than cows. Sorry, cows. And New Zealand's great. This is cool. The board looks awesome.
Is that the only thing that changes in the game, is the animal?
No, there's a whole bunch of mechanics that change.
Just a random put out there. How many mechanics can you change before it's a totally different game and it's not Great Western Trail anymore?
I mean, I guess it depends. It's all about keeping the core of the game the same. So, like, the basic mechanism of moving around the trail, you can put buildings on the trail, you're delivering animals to cities. That's all the core of it. So, like, I think there's pretty big leeway. You know, there's a lot of games that'll be like, it's this game, but the dice game. Or this game, but the card game. And they're kind of different. But in Great Western Trail New Zealand, the second time I played it, I hated it so much, it retroactively made me not like the first games, even though the thing that I hated about it was not present in the first one or in Argentina, which was there's these cards. In a Great Western Trail, you're collecting cow cards for your deliveries, and you're just building a deck of a hand with a whole bunch of cards. Except in New Zealand, there's cards that you can play from your hand and immediately draw up another card, which you normally can't do that. And people were getting so many of these cards that it took literal minutes to get to their actual turn, because they're like, oh, I'll play this card and I'll get 2 coins. I play this card and I bump on this track. I play this card, I get 2 coins, because they kept drawing up new cards.
You just stack in your turn over and over again.
And by the time they were done doing that, the resources they had for their turn had changed so much, they had to reassess their entire strategy, and it made the game go so long, and it was so boring to watch. Like, sometimes it's really fun to watch people play who are playing well. This was just watching people draw and play cards and nothing else. It was so miserable, and it made me just like, I don't know if I can play any Great Western Trail anymore, which is fine, because I don't actually need more games. But I thought Great Western Trail New Zealand was it for me, and now I never want to play it again. And I've never turned around so hard, so fast on a game. I felt bad. I was being a grump at the table. I was just like, this isn't fun. And fortunately, everyone I was playing with was laughing at me and being like, sorry, Nate, play a card, get this, play a card, get this, play a card, get this. And they were laughing, so they still had fun, and that's good, because I was just like, I'm done.
Could you have made it worse for yourself by the fact that you were being a grump and everyone was enjoying you being a grump, so they were doing it on purpose, where they would have maybe not done that before, but they're like, I'm going to try and annoy Nate even more.
No, because it was just like the best strategy for them. Like, they won by a lot because they were getting free resources.
I guess they just
throughout
played games
their turn
different than me, because that was what I would have been doing.
Yeah,
I was like,
well,
Nate hates this. This is what I'm doing now. This is what my game is.
Yeah, and that's fair. And if they were doing it that way, that's fine. You know, as long as they're having fun, I don't want to be a fun burglar at the table. So as long as they're having fun, that's good. I was not having fun, and it was a surprise, because I literally played 1 week prior and loved it, but no one else did that strategy.
Well, here's another question. Could you make house rules up for that, and can you play that game without those cards? Could you be like, this ruins it for me, so maybe take out half of them, or would that change the game too much?
Well, you can definitely play the game without those cards, because there's 2 versions of it without those cards, but in this one, there's too much on the board that says, like, oh, you get that type of card, that if you remove those cards from the game, then you are cutting out actual actions that are built into the game that people could do.
Oh, yeah, it just ruins that part of the
game.
Yeah,
so it's like, it just, makes it like, oh, great, now there's a spot that's not as valuable because I don't get this bonus every time. Yeah, that would be I thought about that a lot, actually, because that would be my preference, is just to not have those cards in the game, and I don't think you can just eliminate them, which sucks, because there's a whole new mechanic called sheep shearing. You don't even have to deliver your sheep. You could just shave the wool off of them. I loved it. It was great.
The best part.
I love shearing sheep.
Wool sweaters for those.
We were calling it the Ed Sheeran action.
Oh, you just ruined it.
Well, that's what I do, you know.
Not playing the game anymore with that.
Well, I think maybe it's just because, you know, the sheep shearing, it's like, you know, I feel related to sheep because I've got puffy curly hair, and so it's like very sheepish, except not as thick as sheep wool, unfortunately.
That's why my Nate sweaters keep failing. I can't use your hair to
your knit sweaters. Yeah.
It's not working anymore.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's too thin.
I'm working on some more here. Yeah. You can patch it. All right, James. So you got some more things that you'd like to dive into.
So yeah,
here.
This is something that I did bring something to the table today. So even though you made fun of me before, I did think of something.
You made fun of yourself.
Ah, oh, that's just me. So like I said, when I came in to play Lords of Vegas, or when I come in to play any game with you, and you see it on the table, one of the worst parts, I think everyone will agree on this, one of the worst parts of playing a new game is learning the rules. It's the worst part. It takes the longest, it can drag on, and that's the part that always daunts on me the most. That when I'm being read the rules or being told the rules, it's a lot of information to go in. You make it so easy. I'm going to give you more praise. This episode is just praising you today.
You know, you can't see my blushing, but just know what's happening.
You explain the rules in a great way, and I just wanted to learn more about how you find is the best way to tell people rules to make sure they're not blanking out or getting bored then, or if you found a way that like works over something else, or just how you do it. Like, there's a rule book.
Yeah.
Do you just read the rule book and go through it? Or do you like, actually, I should talk about this part first and this part should lead into this part? How do you do it?
In preparation, I think I mentioned in the first episode, I will watch a rules video. I'll read through the rule book at least once, if not twice. I try to review it. Setting up the game sort of helps get sort of the context of everything. If it's a really complex game, I might play some by myself, like multi-handed. When you're teaching the rules, it's often important, this is something I often forget, is to give context for what you are doing in the game, what your goal is as a player. And so it's like, yeah, we're trying to get points. How do we get points? You get points by doing this, 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 and this, and sort of a broad overview, maybe a little bit of like thematically, what are we doing in Lords of Vegas? Hey, we're in the early years of Vegas. We're builders, and we're going to build up our casinos and try to make our points and our fortune that way. And then I try not to go too into the deep, deep weeds. There's always stuff that people are going to ask about throughout the game, and there's some games that you can kind of learn along the way. There's other times where you do have to go over every little thing. Fortunately, a lot of board games have great iconography out there. And so when we played The Gallerist, that one is just like, yeah, this spot, you see this symbol, this corresponds with over here. And just kind of being sure to point everything out to people. It's a huge overload. Often what I try to have people do is watch a rules video themselves before they come, though I'm fine if people don't.
I never do that.
No, that's fine.
I want to give you more work.
No, that's fine. That just gives me a leg up when I try to beat you.
When you lose to me?
When I lose to you. I've lost to you a lot, actually.
Most times, yeah.
I think The Gallerist might be the only time I beat you.
Yeah. But did you really beat me?
Yes, I did. Really? Yeah, yeah.
By points,
I crushed you.
But
I beat you by a lot on that one.
Who had more fun?
But yeah, and then it's just, I think the advantage of talking, of doing the rule sheets with people in person is, at least with people you know, is you kind of know how to talk to each other and you know how to break things down. It's helpful when people don't ask a ton of questions in the middle, because like usually there's a system of like, I'm going to get to that. And then like, hold your questions till the end sort of thing.
I realized I do ask a lot of questions when you're telling the rules. But sometimes I need to, because I'm like, that was another thing I wanted to say. That sometimes when you're reading the rules, not just you, but when rules are being read in general, you will go over something and I'm still trying to think about what you just went over, and then you've moved on to something else, and then I'm like trying to play catch up, and that drags me behind a little bit. So sometimes I need to ask questions, be like, wait a minute, can we go back a few steps?
Yeah, no, and that's totally fair. And I do try to stop me, like, do you have any questions about that? But sometimes you just like, you're not clocking what's going on, and you're like, yeah, I can't move on until I get this, and that's fine. But it's just something you have to practice. I don't even think I'm necessarily that good of a rules teacher. I think the games that we've played are rules friendly teaches, where there's not a whole lot of minutia. If we ever get down to playing Barrage, and even Barrage, I think it's not too bad, but like some more rules heavy games, that aren't as straightforward as the Gallerist. Like, I still feel like I could teach the Gallerist without even going over the rules. That one was like so streamlined in my mind, at least.
But then the Gallerist is a heavier game since you threw is part of games into the deep.
Yeah, it was like one of the heaviest games I owned. But like in terms of learning it for me, it was like, oh, this is so sticky. It's just like right in my brain. And yeah, but it's just over time, you, as the person in my group for a long time who was the one who bought the games and had to learn and teach the games, you just kind of develop a skill. I won't say it's like a great skill of mine, but you know, you said nice things to me for once. people get the point. And I always tell people anyway, the first game, we're just pulling levers. Like, don't try to be the best you can be at this game, because we don't know what's going to happen. We're still learning the game together. So, like, no need. Good life advice in general when you play a game for the first time. Don't try to, like, make the first game your best game ever. Just learn the rules. Learn the mechanisms. Pull some levers. See if they work or not. I tend to play games that way anyway, and I don't know why I get upset. When I do poorly, I don't get real upset, but I'm like, oh, I can't believe I did poorly. It's like, oh, because I was playing suboptimally, because I was like, I'm going to try to make this move work. And it's like, oh, that move doesn't work.
I mean, that's what I always tell you when I'm playing games. I'm not here to win. I'm just here to have a good time.
No, you're here to beat me.
I am there to beat you, but I say that, so if I don't win, I don't seem like a sore loser. I could be like, well, I'm not here to win. Yeah. It's all fine, but really, I do die inside every time.
All right, we are just about out of time. I do want to say one last thing. I've had a few interactions lately of mentioning board games in public to people, and there's always like one or two people in that group that like comes running up, is like, yes, board games, I want to talk board games. We're like, yeah, let's do this. I was over at KBPS talking to some students over at their radio station. Shout out to KBPS, they rule. And like two of the people were like, oh my gosh, have you ever played Catan? And I was like, no. And then they made fun of me a bit. And it's just awesome. There's just like so much enthusiasm out there. And I just wanted to get that in. And James, do you have anything to say before we go to the outro?
No, I'm all
right. All right, because we're coming down to the wire here. So thank you for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. If you enjoyed the program today, please consider showing your support by making a donation. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but how you throw your friends under the bus along the way. Have a good one.